Maybe that's what it means in your world. In my world, it's always something different.
Oh.
Teddy Jake.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-29. You sound like you're about 10 years old in that, by the way.
Teddy Jake.
It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming by. Ladies and gentlemen, your president, prophet, seer, and revelator. It's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
I can't begin to tell you how disappointed we are in the media that it didn't snow after all. I thought we'd be sitting here talking about the snow for an hour, but no.
I got a whole bunch of things last night, like, I don't know that I'll be at work tomorrow, and you just, I don't know. And, you know, people are, like, freaking out that they didn't think they were going to be able to come. There's no snow.
Darn it all to heck.
None.
Well, let's switch gears, and let's all hate again for a few minutes.
What's...
The president will have a tough slog in convincing the American people to accept more troops heading to Iraq, but he's going to send a whole bunch. He will try to do so tonight in a primetime speech to the nation, and we all know what he's going to say anyway, and nobody believes him. But many folks like these in New Jersey say they've had enough of war.
In 4 years, he didn't do nothing there. What does he want more troops for? He's spending a lot of money for nothing.
I think it's done over there. I think we should just leave. We've had killed enough soldiers over there already. Think that we've done enough, and that at some point you have to cut it off and get out.
These people hate America and freedom. Now listen, and when you've lost this guy...
In 4 years, he didn't do nothing there.
When you've lost that guy, baby, with George W. Bush, when this guy, when this, the head of the local 32 pipe fitters union...
In 4 years, he didn't do nothing.
You're hosed. You're done. You're finished.
Send a cement shoes for somebody. Well, Jack from Jersey says more troops may be a good idea.
Something's got to be done. I mean, you can't bail out, and I think they should go in there and take care of it.
That's the crystal clear vision, by the way, that comes from the Bush administration is the...
Something's got to be done.
There you go. Thanks for putting that in the right perspective.
No, what it is that for some reason it's been pounded into everyone's heads that, you know, you can't just leave.
You can't just... It's wrong!
But nobody has a reason why you can't. They've just been told that you can't just do that. You can't do it.
That really is true. That is true, and
it'll demoralize the military.
And I...
We have to care about the feelings of the generals.
You know what demoralizes you is being shot. That is.
They don't have to worry about that in the Pentagon.
No, they really don't. But you're right, and you really crystallized it too. That no one has really ever explained why
that? You didn't want to even talk about this.
Why you can't leave, and here you are.
Here you are in the forefront of the conversation,
being sucked into it.
I'll just sit back here, relax, and let you do quiet it for a while.
You can't leave. Why? Well, because I don't know. And then they it's that whole like you don't need to see their identification. I don't need to see your identification. That's the
something's got
to
be done. I mean, you can't bail out and
for reasons that I don't understand and can't explain.
Okay.
So meanwhile, Alabama Captain Jeff Owen commands a National Guard military police academy. He trains the Iraqi police down there. He says the presence of his men helps build confidence of the Iraqi police.
Us being out there with them helps build their confidence. When we roll out into the cities, we take them with us, and you know we train and partner with them and help them build their confidence.
I think that guy's speaking through one of our microphones. I can catch like every third word there.
Meanwhile, instead of going back to Alabama, he said that he would be willing to serve a second tour in Iraq.
Can't tell you what I'd do in 9 months, but right now I'd feel comfortable coming back to the country, continue the work with the experience that we have. So my answer would be yes, I would redeploy at this point.
Yeah, have fun with that. All right. On this subject, actually,
are we going to talk about this further?
No, well, we've got a call. And
one big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Super strength, George.
Hey, Rick,
hello,
how's it going?
Hello, sir.
Not that I was ever in favor of this war, but had you wished to execute it properly, the only successful occupations in history have been where there's a 1-to-40 ratio, that is one soldier to the 40 inhabitants of the country. So that, in that case of Iraq, that would take 650,000 of our troops right from the get-go. Not 150 like that idiot Rumsfeld one.
Oh, I'm cold. Oh, right. Oh, there's a draft in here. Oh, yeah. Now, you got to nuke that place from orbit. That's the only way. That's the only way to be sure now. That's
we're busy doing that with our so-called depleted uranium right now. If you look on the web under depleted uranium deformities, you'll see some horrific fetuses being born in Iraq. So just wanted to cheer everybody up there.
Thanks for giving us the phrase of the day early, right, George. You're always good for a pick-me-up.
Yeah, thank you. So remember that, occupation 1-to-40.
Right, and then it does make sense.
Those fetuses. Thank you.
Because basically what we're trying to do is to take over the country the size of California with the population of the city of Salem.
Yeah, that's totally, that's exactly it, is what
that's
I told.
That's what the numbers say. I mean, how do you even contain a border that size to stop these people from coming in?
No, there's no... Well, I should just replay Scotty's observation yesterday that we ought to go... What was his thing? That we ought to take everybody and just move them into neighboring countries and then let them back in one at a time. It was gold.
After a proper screening.
After a proper screening. That's the thing. I'm not going to rehash the whole thing, but it's like...
So we'll have some kind of baton death march.
Yeah, I mean, you
interact and clear it out, start again. After it's been swept up.
You've
dusted.
It's...
Well, I hear what...
It's like Lycus's house with the black mold. You just got to go through it.
I hear
you're going to need to stay in a Marriott for about a month.
Some of this funding will go to repainting schools. So maybe it's the same colors we have out here, which is very calming. Well, it hasn't been ever since we've...
This is not calming. This color out here in the hallway
that.
Is not calming
it's
at all.
It's having an effect on you.
Do you know the... I'm sorry. I don't mean to be having a nervous breakdown on the air. It's just sort of happening. Hello.
Don't worry about it. We'll take care of things.
We've got a nice soft room for you to go to. You know the most calming color, they say, for asylum inmates?
Isn't it light green?
It's light green. It's strangely enough, it is almost exactly the color of those Altoids ads. That mint green that the Altoids magazine ads and the billboards, that's the color.
Everything in the early 70s was green.
Exactly.
Even NASA. NASA's command headquarters.
Because of all the drugs, they just had to. We're going to start painting houses green. We should create that urban legend right now that's why all the furniture and the kitchen appliances were green in the 70s, because the government was trying to calm the citizenry after Watergate and Vietnam by making houses more subtly shades of green.
And I think that color pumpkin was used, too. All of the intercom walls were that color.
Pumpkin.
And everyone walked out peacefully.
Not anymore. make sure that you fire
pumpkin
everybody.
Means I love you.
Fire... What does that even mean?
Somebody told me that at intercom.
Somebody told you that pumpkin means I love you?
Yes, and that's why the walls were painted that color. I don't know if they're still looking
understand.
There or not.
Okay. I'm looking for an appropriate soundbite here. There's with a steel dildo. Oh, that's wrong. all firings are to take place in the pumpkin room from now on. Okay.
Is that where the pizza party is?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mention the pizza party yesterday.
It was a very...
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, darn it.
That's too late now. I only mentioned the part where Aaron Hubert says they can't figure out a way to stop losing money. Mark, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, love your show.
Thank you.
I was just wondering about the numbers from that industrial strength George person who says that occupation is 40 to 1, our soldiers. If that's the case, what about Japan and Germany where we...
You're calling from inside a drill?
Huh?
Nothing. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that it seems like his numbers are just kind of made up, kind of fanciful. The only way to have a successful occupation is to win the war in the first place. And then, you know, then you can occupy it all you want. That's all we have to do, really.
Well,
thank you.
That was the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I don't know what we're talking about. And he was calling from inside of like an electric toothbrush of some kind.
I had to take my headphones off because I was hurting.
Rick, I'd like to discuss this metallic whine that comes out of my ears all the time.
No, it sounded like the inside of a jet fighter.
But he just said the only way to
occupy... bomb Moscow.
This is the President of the United States! I'm sorry, sir. I can't obey that order. Tim knows what I'm talking about.
Well, that's what I was thinking of. That's what that sound reminded me of.
You're thinking fail-safe?
Yeah.
Totally,
that's
yeah.
a fail-safe sound.
Oh, man. Have you seen that movie recently?
I said it a few months ago. It's one of my favorites, though.
That'll mess you up, that movie. That's 67, 66?
Oh, no, before that.
Really?
63, 60. I think Kennedy was still president.
Man, you got to see the movie Failsafe, Sarah. Henry Fonda, Larry Hagman, Walter Matthau.
Great performance.
It's like someone has grabbed your intestines, and they are just slowly twisting them over the course of like 90 minutes. And you just want to scream. The tension in that movie, it's a Cold War, it's like a, it's kind of like 12 Angry Men. It's sort of like a play. It takes place in just, I think, two rooms. But it's like over the course of the movie, and it's about the Cold War, like nuclear tension. And at the end of the movie, you just want to go, you just want to start weeping in front of the television because you just want the movie to resolve itself because it's so unnerving. You're right. He did sound a lot like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Rob.
You must watch that tonight.
It's okay. A great movie. Fail
safe. Back to us tomorrow.
I've got it on DVD if you want it. Rob, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. I've got a couple of James Brown punchlines
yes,
for you. Morning show ready.
Okay. He's been been dead for 16 days. They just won't bury him.
16 days? He must be getting really funky.
See, that's the one I was going for. That's the one I was going for, was blah, blah, blah. He really is filled with funk or some funk type joke. Okay, that's okay. What's your other one, sir?
Okay, number two, 16 days, he must smell super bad.
Super bad. Excellent. I didn't even think of that one, and I'm filled with shame because of it. All right, well
oh,
done, sir. Thank you, Rob.
All right.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Excellent. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, global warming's affecting everyone, even in Minnesota. They're having a heat wave there. And the folks who live in that fine state say the temperatures could reach as high as 40 degrees today.
There's been record warmth on the east. And also, it has been very warm and snowless in Central Europe as well. The Alps just got their first major snowstorm of the winter only in the past week.
That guy's just packed full of energy. You know what he sounds like? He sounds like the guy that does the pre-recorded broadcast. Did you ever drive through like the Snoqualmie Pass area and those weird radio stations?
Oh, yeah.
Turn dial to 1350 for traffic instructions between whatever. And do you ever wonder who works at those radio stations? I mean, who's there? And who records those things?
Yeah, I was going to say it's just recorded.
But, I mean, how does it operate? And how do they get there? And where do they transmit from? And are there studios? And is there a guy that has to sit there?
Where's your typical radio station today?
Done by a guy in Houston?
Yeah.
Hello, the sporting team from our area was victorious over the sporting team from the other area last night. Go team! Now, because I was wondering about those radio stations and whether they've got to be updated as circumstances warrant. And if so, how do they do it and where do they do it? And I realize that no one cares. Kevin, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, maybe they're waiting for him to get on up.
Thank you. James Brown, dead 16 days, waiting for him to get on up. Thank you, Kevin. All right, there you go. We're assessing the audience's readiness to step in and fill in for the morning show host of any stripe and variety by mentioning that James Brown has been dead for 16 days and has not been buried. Here's Tim Riley.
Speaking of that, it is time for another Snuff Watch.
Here's, really?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say.
All right, here's your Snuff Watch for Wednesday.
Well, the monster mom has passed away, Yvonne DiCarlo.
No!
Yes, Yvonne DiCarlo. The film and television actress best known for vampire bride character Lily Munster in the classic 60s sitcom The Munster has passed away. She was 84. She died of natural causes. Oh, boy, she must have died broke then. At the motion picture and television facility near Los Angeles.
I don't know. Please
that's,
do.
That's where people go when they're out of money.
Is that where, like, Bela Lugosi, the kind of place they were showing him in Ed Wood?
Mm-hmm. The Munsters lasted from It only lasted 2 years, from 64 to 66.
2 years?
Yep, but it's never gone off TV, really.
No. Well, you know, Gilligan's Island, I think, was only two seasons.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had their big feature motion picture, Munster Go Home, which was the drive-in movie.
Yeah.
Along with the Munsters, Yvonne DiCarlo is also remembered for playing the wife of Moses in the epic motion picture, The Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Her shapely figure helped launch her career in B-movies and desert adventures and westerns in the 50s. Later, she played a key role in the landmark Broadway musical Stephen Sondheim's Follies. She was able to sustain a long career by repeatedly reinventing herself. She is a longtime student of voice. She sang opera at the Hollywood Bowl. And when movie roles became scarce, she ventured into stage musicals. Her death comes less than a year after the death of Al Lewis, who played Grandpa on The Monsters.
Boy, I thought that guy was never going to die.
No, he was around for longer and ran for mayor, didn't he?
Totally. She's like 180. She was 84.
84, yeah.
Well, she was beautiful, too.
Yes, she was.
The thing about Yvonne DiCarlo is, and I got to say, first of all, I'm more of an Addams Family fan than a Munsters fan, but you know, what are you going to do? I think that Addams Family, here's how I see it. I think, at least for me, it's like that the Addams Family is something you watch when you're a little younger, or the Munsters, rather, and then as
the Addams Family is actually scary.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's morbid. It, like, is a legitimately morbid show.
I mean, I was scared to death of the grandma on there, Blossom Rock.
Really?
Yeah. He was the scariest woman on television.
And there was the plant, Cleopatra, that ate people.
And Thing.
And Thing, which is the disembodied man.
You have to petrify any child.
No, it's true. And I think that's why I was strangely sort of compelled by it, just because it was so, like, you could tell, and this is really...
Thing is played by itself. It says it in the end. I always wanted to know who Thing was, and I always studied the end credits, and Thing is played by itself.
They never listed a hand actor?
No. Thing is played by itself.
Now I gotta know. Well, do you want to know? Or do, would you prefer, is it going to be, will it spoil the magic
if we won't
find out who played Thing?
No.
All right, somebody's got to find out who played Thing in the Addams Family. Like Wikipedia or something might have it. You look for that. Is, you're sure it's not going to ruin the experience for you?
No.
Okay. The thing about, and this really right now, I'm now going to announce this. We are entering this, what they call in radio, the wheelhouse of this radio program. This is what this show does best. Right here. This right here, you are witnessing it. This is what this program does better than anybody else. We're going to talk about the differences between the Munsters and the Addams Family. But you, I really believe I'm right about this. A, it's hard to believe that the Munsters only ran for 2 years, but again, Gilligan's Island only ran for 2 years. Here's another thing. People remember Chevy Chase being on Saturday Night Live a lot. Do you realize that Chevy Chase was only on 11 episodes of that show?
Yeah.
Chevy Chase, at Sam the Butcher, Bringing Alice to Meet, he was only on like 3 episodes ever of the Brady Bunch. I mean, less than, it wasn't even like a full season. People remember that Cousin Oliver, that dick, but Sam the Butcher. I mean, he was a handful of episodes at that. The thing about the Munsters and the Addams Family is that you watched the Munsters, at least for me, when you were younger, because it was cartoony, much more so. And they were all patterned after recognizable monsters. Frankenstein, Dracula, Bride of Frankenstein, obviously.
And the lighting used on that show made it look like something out of the 1950s.
Totally.
Like the old topper shows.
Yeah, and it was
that type of lighting.
And it was really over the top cobwebby, and it was very, you're right, it was very had a lot of really weird.
What black and white does best.
Shadowing that
it could never been in color.
No, and really rich. Well, have you seen some of the episodes in color?
No, I couldn't do that.
There are, because they experimented with making the Munsters color for a while.
Not meant to be.
No, the Munsters was originally supposed to be a color show. I've been saving all this knowledge, and I'm sad that Yvonne DiCarlo had to die, but this is where I'm uncorking it now and pouring my knowledge lovingly over the audience, like a fine vinaigrette.
This is the way she'd want to be remembered.
It's true. That show, The Munster, was originally supposed to be in color, but they could never get Fred Gwynne's makeup right.
Oh.
They could never get his Herman Munster makeup to be the right shade of green, because he was supposed to be green, he's supposed to be Frankenstein, and they could never get it to look realistic. It always looked too cartoony, and so that's why they went with black and white, and of course black and white's also cheaper.
And I believe Munster Go Home, the movie which came out in 1966, was in color.
That probably is true. And there is an E! True Hollywood Story all about that show. And also, that's another one of those programs, same character, two different actresses, because Marilyn, the daughter, was played by two different actresses.
Oh yeah, and it was unnoticeable.
No.
It was kind of like the Dick York, Dick Sargent thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Pat Priest and, God, who was the other one?
I can't think of the second one.
Pat Priest played Marilyn Munster. And I don't remember who the other actress was. Pat Priest is still alive, though. And I just had the,
Yeah, she owns a B&B somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, I read that story.
I had a huge crush on her when I was a kid. And then Yvonne DiCarlo, it kind of weirds you out, actually, the Lily Munster thing, because I saw pictures of her. I only knew her as Lily Munster for a long time. And then I saw pictures of her when I was older, when she was like in old movies and whatever. And you realize how beautiful she was.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's too late for me. Like, I couldn't retrofit. Like, I couldn't ever really be attracted to her because I can't retrofit my brain. It's like my thing about Drew Barrymore, how I can't be attracted to her because she's always Charlie from Firestarter and what's her name from E.T. And so it is with Yvonne DiCarlo. But then as I got slightly older, I moved on to the Addams Family, which is especially, when was that on? 61, 62?
Yeah, it was on at the same time. I think it was 64, 66, around the same time.
The Addams Family, you watched that program, especially for 40 years ago. And John Astin, how is he still alive? That guy's got to be older than dirt, John Astin.
No, he's one of those people who was born old.
He's fantastic, though.
And don't forget, he and Patty Duke were together, and there was quite an age difference between them.
Yeah.
So he was young at heart.
She's dead, isn't she?
No, she's still around.
Patty Duke?
Yeah.
I know Carolyn Jones is dead. She played the Morticia. And I know I'm all over the place here, but these are the times when these thoughts count. So the Addams Family, especially for 40 years ago, is a legitimately creepy, dark program. I mean, and there's a lot of humor in that show that I think the censors and the standards and practices people just didn't get. Because there's a lot of very thinly veiled references to Gomez Addams. And why is his name Gomez when he is the whitest of white men? I mean, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. It's just sort of strange.
I believe those are based on articles originally written
in the
Saturday Evening Post.
Oh, is it the Saturday Evening Post or the New Yorker?
It could have been either. I don't remember.
I think it's the New Yorker.
It could have been New Yorker.
Charles Addams.
Yep.
And then I
with two D's.
Yeah, so I guess the characters were already named, and then they got John Astin, because at that time it was, you know, the actors were just white people. That's just how it was, I guess, in the 60s in Kennedy's America. You know, Latin character, get a white man. But so there were a lot of thinly veiled references to Gomez Adams and Morticia Adams' sex life, and a lot of, I'm not going to say like necrophilia jokes, but weird jokes where they linked sex and death together, and a lot of even less veiled references like Pugsley Adams inadvertently killing someone.
Oh.
And I mean, and then Wednesday Addams had a beheaded doll.
She was a creepy kid.
And that girl who played Wednesday Addams, yeah. Totally creepy.
Whatever became of her?
I don't know, because that's the problem where she has been overwritten now by Christina Ricci, because everybody just remembers Christina Ricci, who is, you know, that is kind of her defining role. But I'm not going to say I was in love with, because that makes it sound A, creepy, and B, it's probably just overstating it, but I really, really, as a boy, was, and I think I'm not alone here, I think Aaron Geek in the City would probably be on the same page here, I really was infatuated with Morticia Adams. Not even so much Carolyn Jones, but Morticia Adams. Because she was just so dark and weird and creepy and beautiful and spooky. And the thing about the other difference between the Munsters and the Addams Family, I say going into like the 40th minute on this topic, is that no one wanted to really live at the Munster house unless you were a little kid. You kind of wanted to live at the Addams Family house because they were rich. Here's the other really great difference, is that they were sophisticated. Is the Addams Family was really sophisticated. I know girls or women who felt about Gomez Adams the way I felt about Morticia Adams, because he was so refined and he was just had such a flair and panache and whatever. Anyway, so there you go. I think I've said everything I could possibly say about that. Oh, that sucks, though.
Yeah.
And she's the last one, right? Everybody else except for Pat Priest herself.
Yeah.
And Butch Patrick. Butch Patrick, who's going to die at that same Hollywood...
Well, he's died and come back to life on several occasions already.
You know what kind of looks like Butch Patrick is Tim Nasium, Tim Savage. You look at him, imagine, because Butch Patrick's kind of a stumpy, fat little bastard. Imagine if you took Butch Patrick, who played Eddie Munster, and sort of put him in a stretching machine, because Savage is real tall. Stretched him out to like 6'8", Butch Patrick would be Tim Savage, and vice versa. So where did she die?
At the Motion Picture and Television Facility.
And so is that a nursing home for...
Pretty much in Woodland Hills, yeah. It's right. Where you go when you're out of money, basically.
Right. Well, there you go. So, we're sorry to say that. So Carolyn Jones, or not Carolyn Jones, Yvonne DiCarlo, Lily Munster, dead, freaking dead. There's your snuff watch. Now, did you watch the show anyway, Addams Family, even though it creeped you out?
Yes.
And did you watch it? Did you like the watching it through your fingers, or did you watch it and then just feel unnerved later?
Feel unnerved.
Yeah. It's cousin, it was no. I mean, that was freaky too.
That was too.
The whole show is just bizarre. All right, it's one of those things you don't really realize how bizarre it is until you're thinking about it later.
There was a lot of weird TV on during that period of time. There was the superhero thing going on. You had Batman, the Green Hornet. And then you had Bewitched, so there are all kinds of weird sitcoms back then.
And, you know, the thing is, and I'm like probably the billionth person.
Oh, I Dream of Jeannie?
You go back and watch those shows, and I'm sure that there's some pinhead on VH1 who said this like way better than I would, but those shows have so much weird subtext when you go back and watch them in the 60s in terms of like race relations and sexual orientation and the battle of the sexes and the women's liberation and just there's all kinds of weird stuff that you don't, I mean, one need only take a cursory glance at the character of Uncle Arthur on that show. And, I mean, it becomes clear that the writers, they had a whole different fan base in the back of their head when they were writing that. So, all right, we should take a break. We got all these calls, more from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Ed McCarthy talks about James Brown, who is rotting. You stay there. We're back. Oh, and this, and then we... How, did you pick this bed? Fantastic. That's great. See, you know what it is? That's kismet. It's serendipity. It's Sarah-N-dipity. Sarah-X-dipity. I don't know where I'm going with that. Back after this.
James Brown is dead.
nerve you that we're plotting our escape from you?
What?
Nothing.
There's not enough room in here to throw a fork.
I just want to hear the beginning again.
James Brown is dead.
What is this song even about? This came out, I'm old, this came out 16 years ago. This came out in 1981. Why would you ever record this song when James Brown was still very much alive? It doesn't make any sense. What do you think James Brown thought when he heard this? I mean, that would weird you out. Like, what if you turned on the radio and there's a song called Sarah X. Dillon is Dead? That would, you'd
oh,
be,
any day now.
You'd be unnerved by that. That would weird you out. Did you really just say that out loud? I didn't catch that for a minute. That slipped right by me. That's genius. Okay.
Mass hysteria.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley and so forth.
I don't know if I'm ready to move on.
James Brown is dead.
So anyway.
Here's Tim Riley.
Well, we have all kinds of things to talk about.
Were you guys talking about my mental breakdown when we came back?
For a minute.
Okay.
But I brought up the point that this room is not big enough to be throwing furniture in.
And that the door is
something
there.
Of worst case scenarios of places I've been where such things happen.
And Will is right across the hall, you know, so he can come in and do
it. Can restrain you.
Hey, this picture of Yvonne DiCarlo, thank you for this. She's
a voluptuous woman.
Beautiful. Look at this picture of Lily Munster, Sarah Dillon.
Oh, wow.
She was born Peggy Middleton.
Really?
In Vancouver, British Columbia. But Yvonne DiCarlo sounds much more exotic and fitting for a figure
and
like that.
She looks like Yvonne DiCarlo, not Peggy. She's beautiful.
Yep, she's... And she took the part of Lily to help pay her husband Bob Morgan's medical bills. He was an actor/stuntman who suffered near-fatal injuries while filming How the West Was Won.
I always wonder about really hot actresses like this who take parts where they got to be slathered in goo,
mm-hmm.
you know, or they just, you know, we got this headpiece you're going to have to wear for like a year. Oh, I have the information about who played Thing. We've got this. Thing, believe it or not, Thing was played by 17 different people over the years. Here are the top ones, though. This is from Jason.
I guess when they got too uppity, they were replaced.
I don't like the way that hand was looked. That hand looked me in the face. Stephen Fox, Christopher Hart, Jack Boglin. But then for most of the Addams Family filming, Thing was played by Ted Cassidy, who played Lurch.
Imagine that.
So Lurch was also Thing, except when they had to be in the same scene. Whenever there was a scene where Thing and Lurch both had to appear, it was this guy, Jack Boglin. So there you go.
So he must have got a little extra on the side for being a hand model.
There's a joke there. He got a hand out. No, I got nothing. Anyway, so there you go. So see, one, you came in here not knowing, now you leave knowing. And knowing is half the battle, Tim.
Mm-hmm. So what about that truck that got stalled on the railroad tracks?
I forgot.
As the freight train is barreling down.
This is where Waylon Jennings interrupts and the screen freezes. How are those Duke boys going to get out of this one? And then they go to like an ad for a tampon or something.
Yeah. A car stalled on the railroad tracks in Canby last night. And?
Stalling on the tracks can be fatal.
Mm-hmm. It was struck by an oncoming train.
Oh.
Well, the driver escaped before the impact was not injured.
Okay.
The pickup truck lies, it was hurled 30 feet into the air by the Union Pacific train.
Oh, man.
It was hit southbound at the intersection of Highway 99 Ian South Barlow Road in Canby about 5:40 p.m. A 72-year-old driver from Aurora told the firefighters he was turning from South 99 onto Barlow Road and misjudged the road because of heavy rain and dark conditions. He apparently started to cross the railroad tracks when the vehicle became stuck. And centered on the tracks. The train is approaching. What to do? He fled the vehicle and attempted to flag down and alert the train. Too late. Oh. The Union Pacific conductor Ken Robinson said the 78-car, 5,000-pound-long train, a foot-long train, applied its emergency brakes, but it didn't work. So I guess the emergency brake does not work.
Note to self.
Yeah.
I got so much to say about this. A, Aurora is a word that's going to be difficult to pronounce as
Aurora.
We all get older.
Aurora.
B... old people should not be allowed to drive. C, what was C? C, if you can't see a railroad track because of rain, it does seem like perhaps a visit to an ophthalmologist is in order. C, D, 30 feet in the air? Because don't we all assume, like you picture this in your head, your car getting hit by a train.
Apparently the vehicle flew past him.
Oh, that will F you up. You will never sleep again.
I mean, he doesn't have any memories.
He's creating new memories. Yeah, barely remember what he had for breakfast.
Well, I was looking for my favorite oldies station when my truck got stuck on the track.
He was enjoying the hits of today and today. Flew 50 feet.
Well, the train's going fast and it's heavy.
And we'll see.
The emergency brake doesn't work.
Well, what is the brake for?
Toot, toot, toot.
What is that horn for? If you don't notice a 100-ton train coming at you, you're not going to notice the thing that goes, eh. I mean, that's not going to help. But when I picture my car getting hit by a train, which I do a lot, maybe that's an inside thought. When I picture them finding my dead body and my scrawled note on the wall, I always picture getting stuck on the track, and then I'm like, oh, nope, and then I run out, and then in my mind's eye, the train hits the car, and the car is sort of messed up, but just gets tossed off the tracks. I don't picture going 50 feet in the air. That's insane. And yeah, you're right. You'll never sleep again after witnessing that. That is just completely. Has anybody here ever been stuck on a track near a train, anything like that, ever?
No.
All right, yeah, me either. Because that's one thing that I obey. When those little arms go down, like, you must stop. I stop. I stop. I get way back. When I'm on my bicycle and I have to go past the OMSI to the train track, I don't screw with that. I stay the hell away. Because my father-in-law just told me horror stories about, he was in the polio hospital when he was a kid. And he's like, most of the kids there for polio. They're like two-thirds of them. The other third of the kids, all there, legless, because they tried to jump on a train. And even at my advanced age, that scared me straight from staying away from train. All right, I'm done.
No, so that's why I never go outside.
So that's where the trains are. I have to stay indoors. Right.
So he lived? He did, yes.
All right, fantastic.
He'll be fine.
Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Steve.
How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, you want to know who played Sting on the Addams Family?
Sure, we've been wondering of that all day.
Lurch.
Fantastic. So you're saying Lurch played Sting?
Yeah, they had a cast of the Addams Family promoting the DVDs coming out. And they were interviewed, and they asked, whatever happened with Lurch? And then Gomez, John Adams tossed out, that he was also Sting.
Fantastic. And then presumably they had another actor whenever they were in the scene together.
You would think so. It wouldn't be hard to find a hand, you know, just pretend you're Sting, and you know, pretty much anybody could do it.
All right. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
Well, I would think that the fingers had to be measured to be a certain length.
That's
for continuity purposes.
I wonder if that's true, though. I wonder if that kind of quality control was evident on that program. I'd be curious to know.
Neatly trimmed nails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do you ever wonder how Thing got from one box in the house to another?
No.
I thought about that all the time when I was a kid because there's like a cigar box type thing. And it would open, and mail's in, and like the thing would open, and Thing comes out with the letters, and then Carolyn Jones and all of her hotness says, thank you, Thing, and they go, back into the box. But then later, Thing would appear like in a box in the kitchen, different box. And then, like, I remember at one point they had to carry Thing somewhere, and they lifted up the box, no hole in the bottom. Yes. there's no hole in the bottom. And then I was just to sit there, and it used to just mystify me, which really is equal.
I wonder how they would get Thing through airport security.
I have no idea. I should quit thinking about this. Everybody's dead. We're moving on. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's talk about Rosie. She's very much alive and yappy as usual. She and Barbara Walters presented a united front on this morning's broadcast of the ABC show the day after Donald Trump mailed O'Donnell a letter saying they were both lied to by Barbara Walters. While briefly addressing the situation today, Walters described Trump with three words.
Why is this not playing?
I don't know.
No, I think it's because the James Brown is dead thing. Hold on a second. Described him with three words.
That poor, pathetic man.
Yeah. Oh, my, I didn't expect that.
We just hate people.
Sisters are doing it for themselves.
Wow.
All right.
That is,
right. Meanwhile, Rosie addresses Donald Trump's latest move in their ongoing feud. Sending her a letter critical of Barbara Walters.
He's at it again. How about that, Barbara? You okay, Barbara?
I'm okay, darling. You okay?
I'm okay, too. We're both okay?
Okay.
What can you say about that guy?
It's like having a chisel put into my brain.
How could you watch that?
Because you're a brain-dead housefrau. That's not right. You, but I mean other people. That's really that's
well,
it.
You're waiting for the Price is Right.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Or your relatives. You're waiting for your relatives to come in and like move you so they can.
Bob Barker is getting his pancake makeup on.
Seriously, Mr. Barker needs another hour in the chair. Stretch. The thing is, the addition. I can't believe I'm spending this much time and the brain cells on this, but I liked it a lot more when Barbara. I'm an old school Rosie Trump feud fan. I liked it a lot more when Barbara Walters was above the fray. When she wades into it because she's got so much credibility and integrity, suddenly now it just does look like a big put up. It just looks like a big contrivance. It was before, it was just a bunch of nitwits throwing manure at each other, and I didn't really care. But I
always contrived.
I'd like her to sully herself with this.
Barbara and Rosie agreed to no longer discuss Donald Trump or mention the poor ratings of his latest NBC apprentice program.
We just can't let go. But we're moving on.
The man is obsessed with me. And I'm happy to say his show tanked.
Okay.
So Donald Trump puts out a response on Donald Trump letterhead. And there's no sound with this, but I'll read a little bit. It is sad to see Barbara read her statement off her cue card. Rosie just pushed her out like a pathetic puppet. Barbara has become a sad figurehead dominated by a third-rate comedian, and I now wish that she had not recently chosen me as one of the 10 most fascinating people. So that's that. It goes on and on and on.
I can't even read all of these emails that I'm getting about Ted Cassidy, who was Lurch, also playing Thing.
Uh-huh.
Emails that use the words job and hand repeatedly next to each other over and over and over because he did use his hand for that job.
It's a hand modeling occupation.
Yes, that was his other job. It was with that hand. Mm-hmm. He did a good job. The one that was hand oriented. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Governor Schwarzenegger called on his state to show the nation and the world how they could lead the future. He drove the point home as he delivered his fourth State of the Union address.
We can do this because we have the economic strength. We have the population and the technological force of a nation state. We are the modern equivalent of the ancient city-states of Athens and Sparta. California has the ideas of Athens and the power of Sparta.
Really? It sounds like he's doing like a detergent cover. The only California has the power of Sparta. Whiter than white.
He said that rebuilding California is not a burden, but a privilege.
It is not a chore. It is a privilege. It is a privilege to be able to help this state reach its full potential. It is a privilege to be able to help the future generations fulfill their promise.
All right. Well, whatever. There you go. There's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Meanwhile, a woman set herself on...
Sorry, I don't know why that keeps playing.
What is that? It's playing by itself.
I know.
It's
not unlike James Brown
himself.
It's
the ghost of Yvonne DiCarlo.
I don't know what it is. I keep hitting stop. Now, okay, we're done. Hold on. I'm closing it, and hopefully it'll stay closed now.
I don't think so.
It's like some zombie James Brown thing. Remind me to play this actual James Brown interview thing later, though, man. It's genius. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A woman set herself on fire in the elevator of a downtown hotel in Seattle. The woman hasn't been identified. She suffered burns to 60% of her body and was taken to Harborview Medical Center. She made a guess that the Marriott Waterfront firefighters were called to the hotel on a report of a fire. The woman was found in the elevator on the fifth floor of the hotel. Fire alarms were sounded on the third through seventh floor. The fire crew didn't order anyone out of their rooms. Some guests evacuated on their own.
Do you ever find yourself inadvertently press that alarm button by mistake? Like you're there and you're trying to hit seven and for some reason
nobody will answer that.
You're, no, and I did it once. I was like trying to hit seven and like my hand just disobeyed somehow and it was all...
I had to push one of those once. I got stuck in an elevator in college.
Yeah.
In a parking garage.
When you say stuck, do you mean you were drunkenly jabbing all the buttons at once and it locked up?
No, it was the art building. I was there for a class and the elevator just stopped and I got stuck between floors and somebody had to come in.
Did somebody actually, the alarm worked?
Mm-hmm.
Because the one time...
There was an alarm and there was a little telephone button that you push. They tried to send somebody out.
You that little door you open, where and there's a little brown, the little...
It didn't have a phone, handset. It just had a little button that had a telephone on it, and I hit it, and somebody eventually came.
Oh,
it was scary.
Oh, the freak. See, I'm not terrified of being stuck in an elevator, but it was just a little freaky to me that I pressed the alarm, and, like, the elevator just sat there for, like, 10 minutes, and then it just started working, and no one ever arrived. So, like, if I were to die, I mean, the elevator was, like, burning up, no one ever would have saved me.
Here's Tim Riley. Rick Santorum, the Republican who lost his bid for re-election to the U.S. Senate in November, is joining the conservative think tank based in Washington, D.C. This is the Ethics and Public Policy Center, describing its goal as applying Judeo-Christian moral traditions to public policy. Good luck. He will direct anti-terrorism.
Okay.
Whatever.
The thing is, I if I wanted to go home and woodshed a little bit, and I could probably build a better Rick Santorum joke. I mean, really, Dan Savage is sort of the gold standard. There's nothing I can do that Dan Savage hasn't already done better in any number of ways. But there's no point, because Rick Santorum is he's just irrelevant enough that I don't need to care. Oh, I knew this was going to happen. Paul, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
Hey, Lurch did not play, thanks.
See, and this is how it starts. And then I look up and it's like 306.
This is one of those urban legends.
All right, go ahead, lay it on me.
Thing was played by a 2-bit magician that I can't even remember his name right now.
I do
know it was played by a magician.
I'm sorry, say it again. He was played by who? What?
A magician. There is some magician in Hollywood that was down on his luck, I can't remember what, but he got the audition for Thing.
Why would that makes no sense. Why would you even have to audition to be a hand in a box?
Well, my hands couldn't make it because they're ugly.
Well, okay.
If you're waiting on tables, wouldn't you jump at the chance to play a hand in a box?
Really? I mean, does it...
I would have been glad to play a hand in the box.
If you remember, like, the pilot episode and everything else when Thing was running down the road...
What?
Thing was running down the road?
What are you talking about?
You remember that pilot episode when Thing was, like, running across something?
No. Are we talking about the same show and the disembodied hand and the da-da-da-da? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I don't. How is it that Thing would running? He's a hand.
It was just a hand running down the road.
If this is in the 60s show, it didn't seem like they would have the special effects wizardry to make that show.
It was really bad.
Okay,
it must have been a close-up.
Okay, of that probably, yeah. That's or like a really bad, like a rear projection.
Hey, Mr. DeMille, I am ready to play
the way he could manipulate his fingers is why he played Thing.
How was that done?
Isn't it really just a let your fingers do the walking yellow pages kind of a thing?
No, it was like four fingers and the middle finger sticking up like a head, like an animal walking.
I don't think anyone with a middle finger sticking up would have made it past the censors.
Are we really having this discussion?
The only reason I know this.
This is billion-dollar technology.
Everybody try this at home.
The only reason I know this is because they were on a different Southern California show one day promoting the DVD, and they were talking about who played what. And they said, he mentioned the magician's name, but that played Thing in the hand, because in case you noticed, Lurch was in the room when Thing was in the room.
See, when you start talking about who played what and Thing, we really are in like who's on first kind of territory
now.
Yeah,
that's true. But
what did he play? You know, Thing. No, but what was the part he played? Thing. No, seriously, what was the name of the character? See, and we can just go on like this, and then it'll be 3:00, and we can leave.
Did Thing ever wear a glove in any of the scenes?
James Brown is dead.
Nope.
All right, we have to go now.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, I'm just trying to visualize Thing running down the street.
I don't understand
how middle finger like a head?
I think...
So I'm trying,
I'm trying to do it right now. He's talking about this.
See, it is a special skill.
Like that.
And that's why somebody won the audition.
Where you are putting your hand down as though you're going to be walking with all five fingers, but then you put your middle finger up as though it's... so it looks sort of like a dinosaur or something.
And who's to say Ted Cassidy didn't have that skill?
Yeah, who's to say? These are the questions that are...
Jesus, Carlo, take that to her grave, I would imagine.
God almighty, for the love of sweet, holy Jesus. Oh, and now I can't play this sounder for some reason. With the hole and the... Wait a second. The,
hold me. Like you did,
I swear to God, and then this is it. Aaron Geek in the City, Duran. Hello, sir.
Hey, does my phone actually work this time?
Yeah, well, for now, anyway.
Okay, that guy was an idiot. Lurch was the hand, like, 80% of the time.
Lurch was the thing?
Is that it?
And he never saw him running down the street in the original show.
That's what I was wondering. Aaron, how that was
it never happened. The first time there was ever a disembodied hand running on TV with Hamburger Helper.
And Aaron's disgusted by this display of ignorance.
It could be done with the scenery just moving in a circle and stationary.
I was thinking, did somebody say this? Somebody like a black, long black sleeve.
Yes.
And then sort of a black, like they used to use on those Scotch tape ads, where it was like the magic tape and it was a pair of disembodied hands, but you could see it was just somebody in like a black sweater.
Like they did in Labyrinth with the dancing puppet.
Exactly.
Yeah, because 60TV was going to have that level of quality put into it.
That's what I'm saying. There's no way. It had to have just been like a bad rear projection thing, maybe.
They just carved a hole in the bottom of a table. And
Hold on a second.
It's like the popcorn tub trick and...
Hold on a second. Aaron, stay right there. Don, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. Yeah, several episodes of thing ran down the street with just the hand, and he'd have his middle finger sticking straight out as kind of a radar device, and his other fingers were his legs.
Aaron?
What the hell are you talking about?
There was one episode where he grabbed the bad guy's leg who was trying to kidnap Marilyn. So, I mean...
Okay, Marilyn was in the Munsters.
The daughter, whatever her name was. Uh-huh. See, I have a real job. I don't have time to know the character name.
You don't know what Aaron does.
Thing several times was shown out of his box.
I actually have a good argument about that. This family, I can just pretend.
In fact, they showed how Thing moves from the boxes. He'd do it at night. He'd just run and he slept in the different boxes.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, you're making that up. That's like the one fake. This is like a spot the fake sentence in all of these.
No, because when I was sitting here driving to work and saying, I don't believe Thing had that much mobility.
I think that requires more dexterity than Thing likely had. All right.
If you ever watch Thing's hands, I mean, you know, Thing, he had great dexterity. We're really getting into nerdism now, so.
Now we are.
But no, Thing was out of the box several times.
Aaron?
Thing was never out of the box. Thing was always in the box.
I believe Aaron.
Thing was out of the box at least twice that I can remember because it was one of my favorite shows.
I'm trying really hard not to make finger in box jokes right now.
All right.
Now, who played Cousin It? Who played the hairy little guy?
Oh, no. See, I thought we were going to be...
Always changing. They never had the same person.
Okay.
Okay, and here's the thing, and now we're ending this conversation. Thank you.
You know, I'll tell you what, if you watch TV Land, they will have it on every once in a while on TV.
They'll have a dancing thing.
Okay.
Well, yeah, sorry, your thing will dance, yeah. So you can see. I will attempt to...
Oh, we're losing your phone. Oh, we're losing the call.
Okay.
Aaron, Don, thank you both.
Well, as you can see, everyone is bored with the Iraqi war. We've all moved on.
It's all people can talk about, Tim. People can't get their minds off the Middle East conflict. Jesus, God, is this really our job? I mean, look, I'm not complaining.
It's pretty great.
Even I sometimes take a step back and I just
thinking.
Ask myself, holy crap, what are they paying us for? All right.
Well, it gets the audience thinking, too.
That really is true. No, I mean, in some way, we are probably staving off Alzheimer's in the audience because they are having to use their occipital lobe. And let's see. Let's get Josh. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi.
Hey, I got to make this quick. I'm on a delivery route, actually, but a little off subject. But my boss got me listening to you. I love the show.
Thank you.
But I got to say, you always sounded familiar to me, and I couldn't place it until it just hit me the many days smoking bong ribs playing Grand Theft Auto. You totally remind me of the talk show on the Grand Theft Auto 3, I believe, or 2, Laszlo.
See, I'm actually not much of a Grand Theft Auto player. That's my wife. She's much more of a Grand Theft Auto
person. Has anybody made that comparison before?
I don't believe so. The only Grand Theft Auto DJ I'm familiar with is the one played by Axl Rose, because I actually sought it out to listen to it because I knew Axl played one in Vice City.
Very similar voice, very similar subjects. Analyst pop culture knowledge, but kind of vastly on the other end of...
No, that's cool. No, I'm gonna have to find out. Now I'm gonna have to go see what Laszlo and it's in.
Ask some other listeners to weigh in on that. Laszlo, Rick Emerson, one and the same. I'm not sure.
And it's GTA 3.
It's either 2 or 3.
All right, excellent. I will totally look into it. Thank you, sir.
One more thing on the tune the radio thing.
Yeah.
I actually did that once to see what it was, and it was like AM 1190, just a regular station that does the weather every, like, 15 minutes.
All right. Actually, I wonder if there's a guy, some guy stuck in a tiny little studio there.
I don't know. Right. Anyways, thanks a lot for the entertainment.
Thank you, sir. That's delivery driver Josh.
Is that the board game he was speaking of?
No, what about it is that they've got these... They've got these... It's just firing by itself.
I know.
They've got these radio stations you can tune in while you're driving around in your video game car. And as the game became more popular and more complex, the radio stations took on... They're like real radio stations with commercials and DJs and music and whatever. And in the newest one, Axl Rose is one of the DJs, blah, blah, blah. So apparently Laszlo...
Can we get on one of those?
Who
do we ask?
It's insane. There's like David Cross, I think, is one of the DJs. I mean, it's a popular gig to get now. But apparently, Laszlo, who's a DJ in one of the games, he was saying, that's you have to find it now. All right, well, let's break here. We'll come back. We'll resume this. We'll just roll today's show as it's rolling. We'll have more from Tim Riley. Ed McCarthy's going to talk about
James Brown
when we return. Who's been dead for 16 days. He is
dead.
And still not buried 16 days later. You stay there. Peter Carlin later on. Top 5. Don't go anywhere. Hold your mouth on the wall.